Hello, I'm Rosie and I'm the radio coordinator at Distorted. And I'm on a quest to find out about the ins and outs of all the jobs in the music industry. Today, I'm chatting to Adam Turner. Adam is head of A&R at Enhanced, host of radio show Enhanced Sessions, and DJ and producer under the alias of Farius. We chat about all aspects of the industry, including what it takes to be an A&R, tips on how to pitch tracks to A&R teams, and the current challenges within the industry. Hope you enjoy.
You could write the biggest, longest, most impressive CV in your email, but if the music's not good, it's not going to get signed. You've got to use your networking skills, your personality as well to take you places. And I think that's what I thrive on. And I think that's a good place to start for people, if that makes sense. There are so many fans of dance music out there. Show that you can do something that's a little bit more different.
Thank you so much for coming on, Adam. I know you've got fingers in a lot of pies, as the saying goes. You are a DJ and producer under Farius.
Yeah, that's right.
You have a weekly radio show at Enhanced. You host that. And you're also head of A&R at Enhanced. So there's a lot of angles that we can touch upon today, I think.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll start with, how did you decide to choose a career in the music industry? And why did you decide?
To be honest, I wouldn't have been much good at anything else. That's okay. The honest answer. I was always in and around music as a kid, and I was very involved. I did like music, GCSE, A-level, which obviously here in the UK is our main qualifications when you're at high school. And I went on to study classical music at a music conservatoire here in London. And it was all basically, my whole upbringing really was in classical music.
And, oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, which gave it gives me a different kind of perspective, I suppose, to other people. So I came into it that way. But on the side, I was always DJing. I was doing my mates' parties. I was, you know, when I was at music college on the weekends, I'd be DJing at really crap weddings, which I hated. But I was walking away with 150 quid in my pocket, not spending it on a night out. So I was kind of doing classical and I was doing DJing. And then when I finished at music college, I was like, I'm ready to, I just basically jumped into electronic music. And there, to be honest, like in answer to your question, there was not really any alternative. I never really considered much else. I was always one of those kids at school who was good at the things I was good at and enjoyed them. And if I wasn't good at something, I didn't really give it much interest. So yeah, I think it was all pretty laid out for me from the off, to be honest.
So you went to uni and you got a degree, and then what happened after that? How did you become head of A&R at Enhanced?
Well, there was a big gap in between that. I left uni in about 2012, and I didn't get a role in A&R until 2020. So it's about 8 years, and in those 8 years, I was just DJing. I started out on the gay scene in London, playing a lot of bars and clubs. I was resident at Heaven. I used to play at Fire and all those clubs, and that kind of took me around about. And then in about 2016, I decided I wanted to get back into producing. And I was kind of bored of playing other people's records. I wanted to play my own records. So that's when I started making records as Farius. And I was doing bits before that. I was doing like remixes for like major labels and stuff. That was kind of my route in back into music production. And then when I started the Farius stuff, it was very much more focused into the trance and progressive world. And I signed as an art. I did records on like Anjuna Beats and Armada and 03 at Tool Room. And then in 2019, I signed my first record to Enhanced. And it was completely by chance. You know, it was great. Like, the guys here are amazing. They were amazing back then as well. They were just down the road from me as well. It kind of all made sense. And then it was literally the February of 2020 where Will Holland, who's the director here, he said, I could really do with another pair of ears on the A&R side of things. Would you fancy it? And I was like, actually, no, I'm all right. But yeah, I'm busy. I'm producing and I'm touring and all the rest of it. And then I thought about it a little bit more and I was like, do you know what? maybe that would be quite a good experience. So I kind of rethought that and I went back. I was like, actually, I could do like a couple of days a week for you. And thank God I said yes, because a month later, COVID happened, March 2020, no gigs. Production work dried up. I was doing bits of production work for other people because no one really knew what was going on. And so I took a role 2 days a week, just like mainly focused on the trancier side of stuff here. And that role has developed over the last 5 years into heading up the A&R side of things, A&R side of things across the labels.
And what does your role of A&R entitle? What is your the day in the life of Adam, so to speak?
It can be quite varied. The way I look at it is that you are kind of the first point of contact for any artist who wants to work with the label in an artist capacity. So it's a mixture, really. I get sent a huge amount of demos. As I'm sure most people know, this is the way A&R works. You listen to music, you feedback, and you get the music sounding as good as possible, sort of in the right lane for the label. Or you say, thanks very much, it's not right for us. And then I kind of take the music that I listen to and I work on with the artist. I take it into our A&R meetings, which we do twice a week with the wider A&R team. I say, this is a record from blah, blah. This is what I've done on it. This is what it sounds like. What do you guys think? We listen to it. We talk a bit more. And then from there, I might take the record back to the artist and say, we've got a few more comments. Or I might go back and say, actually, the team didn't really feel it. Or I'll say, actually, yeah, it's great. Let's sign it. So that's the kind of really, really surface level of what I do, I guess, as an A&R. And that's the main crux of the day to day. It's a lot of listening to a lot of music. And so with that comes bigger projects, albums, compilations and things like that, which take up a huge amount of time, working really in depth with those artists and making sure the sound, ultimately it's just making sure the sound is as good as it possibly can be and it aligns with the label and it aligns with the artist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess you're probably going to get asked this all the time, but what do you think makes a good track? What are you listening out for when you're receiving demos?
Innovative ideas, ideas that suit us as a label, so fit into our wheelhouse, but are not what we have already. I mean, it's a really niche kind of thing. When I listen to music, when I listen to new records, I really want to hear something that grabs my attention and something that really sparks me into excitement, I guess, in a way. And I go, wow, that's really cool. I haven't heard that. Or that's an amazing chord progression. Or that hook's great. Or that vocal is beautiful. You know, all these things. So I'm looking for something that stands out as different, but not like it doesn't work for us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you probably get sent a lot of demos every day. How would an artist grab your attention in an email with a link to their demo?
Interesting. Good question. Because sometimes I get these emails with like, here's my entire biog. And if I'm totally honest, you know, I skim it, but you could write the biggest, longest, most impressive CV in your email. But if the music's not good, it's not going to get signed. So I think for me, it's like, you know, if you've never had any contact with that label before, a little bit of info about you, perhaps. But keep it kind of short and concise. They just want to hear the music. They just want to click that link. Because as you say, there's so many emails that come, demos that come in. Like, it's all about the music. So there's and also sometimes I get emails which is just like, just the link. And that for me turns me off as well. Because I'm like, well, I don't know who this is. I don't know where it's from. I don't know anything about you. So there's a fine balance, I think, if you know what I mean, between finding that line between not too much information, but not nothing at all. So just something short, concise, maybe a couple of bullet points, and just go for the music.
And do you have a team around you that helps cipher through the music, or is it just you?
We have, I've got another guy called Lewis I work with really closely. We're kind of the main two A&Rs that look at, we actually look after five labels here. So Lewis actually he's kind of like the first point of contact. So a lot of demos come to like demos@colorize or demos@enhancedmusic.com, like to that email address or through our Label Works portal. Lewis is the guy who sifts through all that, and then he'll kind of send up stuff to me, and I listen to that. But my email address is completely out there, so I get a lot of stuff that just comes straight to me anyway. We also have another A&R who works across our publishing division, but also inputs on the label music as well. And then we have a director at the top who kind of is there to listen to the very last versions of the records and just give us some feedback and sign them off, I guess.
What's the most challenging thing about your job role in A&R?
I'd say like it's... I really don't like disappointing people in life.
Yeah.
But that is the nature of the job. I think, you know, like over 50% of the emails I send back to artists is thanks, it's not quite right for us. And I've never enjoyed doing that. I don't find any thrill or any power in that at all. So I find that a challenge, and I constantly strive to try within the limited sort of hours that I have to give people feedback where possible to say, it's not right for us. I mean, it depends. Like if I get a record that is just clearly being produced in like 2 hours and the person doesn't really know what they're doing, then I might just give it a very polite thanks, it's not right for us. But when it's clear that someone has an idea of what the label is, or they're you know, I might know them from coming to one of our events, something, I really do try, even if it's not something that works for us, try and give them a really good sort of idea of what we are looking for. So that's a challenge. I guess also in some ways, it's a challenge to, I mean, this is such a fast-paced, moving world in music now. I find it a struggle to keep across everything that's going on TikTok. I find it a struggle sometimes to really keep up to date with what is going on, you know. And I think that's also, when you ask me about what my day-to-day is, like, it's not just listening to the music that I get sent. It's listening to, like, what's on Radio 1. It's listening to what other DJs are playing. It's looking at the playlist. It's looking at what's, you know, what is the algorithm doing, and who's getting placed where. So keeping up with that can be quite a challenge at some ways as well. But that's, I think, where the passion comes in, because I'm genuinely excited to see what Danny's playing on a Friday, Danny Howard on Radio 1 is playing on a Friday, or what they're playing on Sirius XM in the US, or what's been added to New Music Friday, you know, all those things. So that can sometimes be a challenge to keep up with those things, but I think I do my best.
And do you think that helps you as Farius, as the DJ side of things as well, to be able to keep on top of things and make sure you know what the latest trends that are going on?
Yeah, 100%. I think I've always thought of it as a bit of an eco sort of system. Everything kind of feeds into each other for me. So I'm kind of across in my A&R day-to-day role, kind of what the trends are and what's happening. I definitely, when I go into the studio, you know, to write a record then myself as an artist, and I do find that balance as well between doing A&R and doing my own stuff, I can take something and be like, okay, well, I know this kind of thing's popping off right now, and I kind of can give a bit of a influence on that in my music as well. So yeah, it definitely, I always say, you know, if people want to work in music, if they're an artist and they're really trying to make it as an artist, if you need to make money day to day, if your artist career isn't providing you with enough income, try and get a job in music somewhere, anywhere, because that will always be better than pouring a coffee in Starbucks or crunching numbers or being on reception in a world that's completely away from music. It's not always that easy, but I do think being in and around the world can that you want to get into can really, really help.
Yeah, because you can get a 360 spin on it all, can't you? You know what labels are looking for, or say you were working in events or something, you know what promoters are after. So yeah, that's
and just being in and around meeting people, you know, even if you're making tea at a major record label, like, you're going to know that you should be going to this gig, or everyone's going to that gig, or what's that record or that artist everyone keeps playing in the office. You know what I mean? So it's just like really small things that sometimes don't add up straight away, but when you look back on it, you go, actually, that was quite influential in what I'm doing as an artist.
Yeah. What's your favourite thing about A&R? We'll do A&R first, and then we'll go into being a DJ.
Favourite thing about A&R is hearing a record which really does transport you and take you to a place where you go, wow, this is so cool. You know, like this, I know this is going to do really well. On a production level, hearing something that I go, wow, I've not heard anyone do that before, or that's like jaw-dropping sound design or something like that. That for me, that's what I really love. So I love that initial bit where that happens and you kind of start cooking the record together, if you know what I mean, and like that excitement, and I genuinely get excited when I get the next version from an artist. I'm like, wow, let's have a listen to this. It might be a Saturday morning, but I still want to listen to it. So there's that bit that gets me excited. And I suppose there's the watching a record go from the very, very small inception idea that it was right through to the whole distribution, the whole marketing, which obviously is not what I do. I then, once the record's signed, I pass it on to the rest of the label here, and they kind of work their magic to make it go get out there. But when you've worked on a record that was started out like that, maybe it was just a vocal and a piano chord or something like that, and you watch it then completely blow up on like Sirius XM, or you watch it get played on Radio One or something like that, that's exciting as well, because that's like, wow, I remember that little bit there. And now it's become this huge thing, you know, or watching it get played by massive DJs at Ultra or something like that. It's like, that is so cool, you know, because that little thing that started here on email has now become this huge thing here, if that makes sense. That's really good.
Yeah, it's like the reward. You can see all the hard work and the ideas and the rewards paid off. Yeah, that's really cool. And then about being a DJ then, what's your favourite thing about that?
Am I meant to say like the free drinks backstage?
Well, yeah.
No, it's not. It's I've been DJing for years. Like I said to you earlier, like I've done everything from like little tiny things like mates parties when I was a teenager, right through to playing huge festivals these days. The thing, I think the common denominator in all of that for me has always been watching. I love watching people get pleasure from music. And I love watching people connect with music. And I love being the person who can do that. I've always been very passionate about showing people new music. I mean, I love old stuff, like reminiscent stuff, nostalgic stuff as much as anybody else. But I get very excited about new music and sharing that with people. So playing a new record for the first time, or playing a record, maybe it's my record or maybe it's someone else's, watching that reaction, whether that be a tiny little party or a small intimate venue that's like 100 people, or on a huge main stage, like I played A State of Trance the other month with Armin in Rotterdam, like watching it connect in that way as well. It's amazing. And that feeling, playing those big shows, I do enjoy. I love playing the intimate ones, but the feeling of doing that, I'll be totally honest with you, Rosie. I've said to many, many people, like, getting that feeling when you play those shows, which are like a 10 out of 10 show with a real connection with the audience, and that it is better than any drug I've ever taken before. And it's not a drug that I could replace in any way with anything else. Like, it is so real and makes you feel so alive and so, just so engaged, you know. It gives you real purpose in what you're doing, if that makes sense.
You're making me want to do that now.
They're not always like that. I've played enough really bad gigs to walk off stage and be like, just get me home now. It was terrible. So, but when you do get it, it's a mental high.
Yeah, and I suppose the bad ones make you appreciate the amazing ones as well, don't they?
I mean, I just literally the other week I did that show with Armin. Huge, incredible 1 hour set, thousands of people. And the following weekend, I was playing in Liverpool and it was like a really average 5-10 gig. And there were problems with the sound, the tech. And it was just like, oh, so, you know, I'm at a level really. I mean, it's funny because there's this meme. I don't know if you've seen this meme going around where people like, when you tell people outside the industry you're a DJ, either they think you're Calvin Harris or they think you play weddings and yeah, they don't know anything in between. And I'm really like peak in between there. Do you know what I mean? So for me, like, I'm not playing sold out festivals every single weekend. I still have the humbling experiences as well, I guess.
Take the rough with the smooth.
Always.
How would somebody start out looking for a job in A&R?
Interesting. I guess it's, do you know what? I've not really met many people who go, you're an A&R. I really want to be an A&R. But I'm sure there are people out there. You know, I think it's a case of finding, certainly finding your, I mean, if we're talking about dance music, and that's my area, this, I mean, I can't really talk for, you know, the major labels who work in indie and pop and stuff, but in dance music, I think it's really about finding your niche and what you really like. So I learned pretty early on when I left music college that I love trance music. I love melodic, emotional music. It doesn't have to be fast or energetic, but it has to really connect with me musically. And I think that has something to do with working in or studying classical music. So finding your niche of what you really like and really getting to know that world, knowing the artists, knowing the labels, knowing everything, or the events, like where everyone's playing, like knowing as much as that as you can, and trying to put yourself, yes, we're all fans of what we like, but try and elevate yourself a bit more to seeing it more objectively, I guess. That's a really good start, not just being like walking into an A&R job interview and being like, I'm a massive fan of the label, and I mean, like, everyone loves to see that passion, but show that you can give a different angle, I guess, or show that you have a bit more knowledge about something else rather than just like any, because there are so many fans of dance music out there. Show that you can do something that's a little bit more different to the next person you were standing next to at the last gig you're at. So I guess, yeah, and then it is always the same thing, as I'm sure you know, that this is not an industry where you qualify in medicine and you become a doctor, you qualify in law, you become a lawyer. There's so much like going to things, meeting people, so much of right place, right time. I have to be really honest, there is so much of who you know, what you know, and the just where you are in life, like that is just a fact of it, and there's a lot of luck involved. But for me, I find that the exciting bit. I would never like to be in an industry where it's all just sort of laid out in front of me. You know, it's like, you know, you've got to use your networking skills, your personality as well to take you places. And I think that's what I thrive off. And I think that's a good place to start for people, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I suppose you have to be really driven as well to be in this industry.
You do. You do. Because the hours are long and the music, the money's crap. So yes, you do. Yeah. You have to love it.
And like you say, there is no, you don't go into a job and then here's a promotion. It's like that some places, but you have to really be your own entrepreneur, I guess.
You do. You have to make your own luck in many ways. But let's not escape the fact that the industry is, you know, there's a lot of nepotism. There's a lot of scratching each other's backs. Like, I'm just being very, very honest. The industry is hugely underrepresented by people of colour, of queer people. You know, like, there's still a lot of old school tactics that goes on in this industry. And I'm so passionate about trying to change that in many ways as well. And actually, I think we are changing to a certain extent as well. And I think people from those backgrounds who might not fit the mold of what a traditional A&R, a traditional person in the music industry might look like, I think they are getting more opportunities, but there's still so much further to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
Do you think you're musical background, so like in your classical music and your theory of that, do you think that's really helped you in your job role as an A&R, or do you think it's not really mattered?
I think it does. I think in the particular corner and area of dance music I am, which is all about, so here at Enhance, it's all about the melody, it's all about melodic elements in the music. Yes, like my training in writing and classical music, that foundation has always given me a really, really solid place to start when working with music. I think there's a very good balance to have when you're an A&R between not being too technical and like, you know, this needs to move exactly like I want it to move chords wise or production wise, you know, this needs that little peak at the 3000 hertz on the EQ needs to do this. Like once you start getting too technical, I feel like it doesn't really work very well with a lot, or some artists don't really respond well to that, but you still need to have that kind of knowledge. But it's about finding that balance between working with an artist in that sort of space, but also keeping in mind the bigger picture as well. And if you go too technical and detail-y like that with artists, sometimes it just doesn't work. So it's a bit of that, So that does help in terms of the foundation I've had, but also taking a step back. And I think my experience as a DJ for many, many years kind of helps, because I like to think that I know what a record would do on a dance floor. So when you're looking at the structure of a record, if there's this huge 2 minute nothing going on in the breakdown in the middle, I'm like, that's way too long on a dance floor for me. Like, please, can you shorten that into 1 minute or something like that? So yeah, there's definitely that helps.
Did you have a mentor or a role model in the industry that's given you any advice or helped you in your career?
I can kind of think of two people. So my first ever step into the music industry was when I was 17, and I got a really random job doing work experience, like literally doing the tea and stuff when I was 17 at a company called IE Music. Their main artist, they're a management company. Their main artist they represent is Robbie Williams. And I got the first taste of not dance music, of music, of the industry when I was 17. That was like 20 years ago now. Wow. And I met a guy there called Michael, who was kind of working on the team. He was young. He was working on the team. Anyway, long story short, we became very, very close. And he's still like my best friend today. And he's now Robbie Williams' day-to-day manager. So he was very, very inspirational in terms of, like, he was always there to tell me as I was going through, actually, maybe just try and do this, maybe just try and do that. That won't work. And by the way, do you know what the difference between a master and a publishing split is? Like, all those things that I never knew. So he was there. He was definitely very, very influential, and he still continues to be very influential for me. A really, really incredible man with an incredible story. And then the director here, Will Holland, here at Enhance, you know, he's a very inspirational guy, and I'm not just saying this because he pays my mortgage, but he genuinely is, like, you know, we've worked together very closely. And even before I worked for Will, I was always aware of him and his influence in the world of trance. So now working with him day to day is he constantly keeps me kind of on my toes, I guess, and makes me think in a different way about things day to day.
Yeah. What is the most crucial trait somebody needs to have to be in the industry? I know we've mentioned drive and passion, but is there anything else that you think is essential for people to have?
I think it's like there's a real misconception that's like you don't need to be the loudest person in the green room or the one who drinks the most shots or whatever. Like, there's a real misconception around that, I think. And some people feel like they walk into the industry and they have to be this loud, big personality. Like, you don't need to be at every single show, every single green room, backstage. In fact, if anything, that's a bit annoying sometimes when you meet that person. I think having a really good balance between taking your job. I think this is one thing I was always aware of when I started DJing, like taking your job as a job. Like, the lines can be very blurred, I think, in our industry when you're around an environment where people are having fun and euphoria and people are there to on their weekends, on their days off. I think there's a very, I think what I can only say what served me well is that I guess I'm a bit sensible in that respect. I've always looked at my job as a DJ and as an A&R now as a job. Like, this is how I paid. It was always how I paid my rent, you know. So when I went to DJ at clubs, yeah, I had a bit of fun, but like, ultimately, this is a professional place for me to be. So I think that's an important trait for people to have, to understand that whilst everyone else is out there having an amazing time and like, this is not their job, it is your job. And you kind of have to find that balance. You can't be too like stiff and serious, because like, people want to have fun with you, but finding that balance between this is a professional place of work and also like, this is also quite fun as well. So I think that's a good trait to have to start out in the industry. And I really respect the younger people that I meet who have that kind of trait. Cause I'm like, either you're like the one who's a mess in the green room, but everyone's like, oh, he's so much fun, but that's not really going to elevate you too far, I think, in the industry. I think the people who find that balance are the people who have the people who you can trust to kind of say, okay, now I want you to do this, or now I want you to take this and move it on. Or do you know what I mean? Like, that's a very good trait to have. I'm sure there are more, but that's the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, not blurring the lines between working hard and playing hard too much.
It's easily done. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'm not saying I've got it right every time, but I like to think that having an attitude towards my work as work has been quite important for me.
Yeah, again, reverting back to that drive and the reason why you're there, not just for the free drink like we mentioned earlier.
All the, you know, all the party or the afters, you know, if you're the one at the afters at 7 a.m. every Saturday, you might think this is great. And I did that early in my career. I'm not saying like I'm a saint. Like I was there, and I remember I went to Above and Beyond like in Brixton 10 years ago, and I managed somehow to get backstage. And I was like, I look back on that so cringe. Like, I look back on it now as like, and I was like in a room with like two Above and Beyond and like one of the A&Rs there, and I was just a bit drunk, shall we say, and I came away being like, oh my god, like I've networked with Above and Beyond. But actually, like looking back on it, it was like I was just that really annoying guy in the green room, you know. So I'm not saying anything bad came from that, and I did go on to release Nine Juno Beats, but it had absolutely nothing to do with that Adam 10 years ago in the green room at O2 Brixton.
Yeah, I hate them moments where you are like networking but also had a few drinks, and then the 3 weeks later you look back and think, oh, what, why did I say that? That's horrible.
But you know, it's one of those learning curves you go through. And I think, like I say, you can't be this, I don't think like the being so straight and serious and, you know, like work the whole time, really. You need to have a bit of malleable flexibility, if that makes sense.
And probably people skills as well.
Yes. Know, yeah, for sure.
If you're
sure.
Very straight down the road, you know, serious, people might not be able to relate to you. And I think we've mentioned in a few of these podcasts that your network is a big thing in this industry.
I mean, that's the other thing I was just thinking about, like, what, you know, when you said what's a trait you need, like, be a nice person as well. Yeah. And I know that sounds really simple, but when it comes to, you know, sending music to me, like, I only want to work with artists who are nice people, like, not divas. Yes, like, know your grounds, know, you know, negotiate your contracts, but not divas or not people who are rude or dismissive or think that they're better than anybody else. You know, like, the people who succeed, I genuinely believe the people who succeed in this industry, whether they're on the industry side, on the artist side, or like the label or the art side, like, they're just nice people. And we just have this policy here, which is we don't work with dickheads. And I've just been really honest. Like,
no, that's true, though. That's,
you know,
exactly.
I mean? Like, no one wants to work with someone who's dismissive or difficult to work with, because ultimately this is a creative environment, and you get the best creatively out of somebody when everybody's getting on and having a great time. You know, if you want to go and work in a cutthroat thing where everyone's on each other's backs, go work in the city and like get on the stock market. Like, we're not about that. You know, it's there's so much more passion and feeling involved, I think, here. No offense, stockbrokers, I'm sure you'll love it.
That's our motto here too. Don't be a dick and don't work with dicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know we mentioned about diversity in the industry, but if you could change one thing about the industry right now, what would it be?
Oh, TikTok.
This is such
I hate
a common
TikTok, sorry.
No, this is such a common response from everyone I've spoken to. They all say TikTok.
I suppose it's a wider thing. When I say TikTok, I mean our reliance. It's a pretty difficult one. Our reliance on social media, I guess, like, it's not great for everyone's mental health, in my opinion. Sorry to be like Debbie Downer about it, but it's not. And I think, you know, if I wasn't an artist and didn't have to keep feeding the algorithm, my brother is not on any social media. His digital footprint is nothing. And I kind of respect that. And I'm like, I wouldn't mind a bit of that. Like, waking up and having to look at my Instagram to see how many, what the algorithm's doing. Like, I think that's one thing I would change. It's like, I love, either you go with it or you don't. And I think you have to go with it, because otherwise you become one of those artists who's like, it's all about TikTok these days and I don't do that. Like, you know, then you have to move with the times. But for me, it's really tiring, and I wish that we could just spend more time working on music and putting out music for for the sake of it being really good music and A&R and really good music. And yeah, we always say it's about that link on the music when you send that first email. But of course, people are going to look at your numbers. Of course, they're going to look at how many Instagram followers you've got and how many TikTok followers you've got and, you know, what your engagement's like and how many Spotify numbers you've got. Like, that is just where we are. Personally, I don't share my end of year Spotify Wrapped because I don't believe that this industry should be so dictated by numbers and figures. Like, again, go find the stock market for that. This is about art. It's about passion. And I guess I'm living in some sort of like ideal utopia with that, but I would love it to be a lot more about that than getting obsessed with numbers. Like, it's just, it's crap.
More about the music.
Ideally, yeah. And I know it's not that simple. And I know money and figures, like, it all talks, and I get that. But for me, I just wish we could just focus more on just putting out good music like we used to for the sake of it. But I don't want to sound like an old has been, you know. I know a lot of old trance people and dance people, they'll go, oh, it's all about TikTok these days. I don't want to come across like that, but I do wish, and I don't think we'll ever get to it, but I do wish we could change it in that way somehow.
No, I get that. Sometimes I say, I think I was born in the wrong era. I think I'm like too ahead of my time. And finally, to wrap up the conversation, I always ask, what advice would you give your younger self? 17-year-old Adam, who was pouring teas, what would you say to him?
that's a really good one. As an aside, do you watch RuPaul's Drag Race? Because they do this as well, and they bring out a little photo of like the young drag queen. They're like, what would you say to young
Adam? Yeah, I do.
So I love this question. So
I have no photo prepared of you, but
that's a good thing, don't worry. 17-year-old Adam, I guess I would say just trust the journey that you're on. Like, you don't need to you don't need to assert yourself in the way that you think you do. You don't need to like feel like you need to stand out or you need to be the loudest voice in the room. And this is something that comes with, you know, with the experience of doing this for 20 years. I guess trust that journey, because when your records get turned down or whatever, like, you know, I never thought I was going to be in an A&R role and I never worked towards this, but it's just the way it's gone. And I'm really excited to see where it's going to go next for me. So trust that journey and trust the process of what's happening whilst you're on that journey, and stop trying to think, but I must be doing this when I'm 30. I must be doing this when I'm 35. Like, just let it go and just like have a bit more of a relaxed approach to your career, I suppose. That's not to say like don't work hard, like put the hours in, put the time in, but don't obsess over worrying about when you haven't got something, it's never going to happen. Just trust that it's going to be okay.
Trust the process.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think I need to take that advice.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's that old saying, you know, accept that you can't change some things, have the courage to change the things that you can, and know the difference between the two. It's the old serenity thing. Like, that is also something I wish someone had said to me when I was 17, because the amount of times you work to try and change something, it's just not going to happen. Or you're just too scared of trying to rock the boat sometimes. Like, just know the difference between those two, if that makes sense. Oh, so fucking cliche, sorry.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much for coming on today. It's been so valuable. I've learned so much from it as well. So thank you.
Thanks for having me, Rosie.
Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast to catch the next episode. And if you'd like to ask our guests any questions, or if there are any job roles you'd love to learn more about, then get in touch with me via LinkedIn at Rosie Black.